Okay, well, good morning. This is Good in a Crisis number 5, and today I've got two people with me who are volunteering on our newest service, the COVID-19 Volunteers Debrief Line. First, I'll sort of tell you a bit about the service. So it started a couple of months ago. I was asked if I could lead on this project, and it was an idea that had come up from a sort of steering group between a number of voluntary sector organisations and the council, where they wanted to provide some kind of support service for the frontline volunteers within Leeds who are doing things like delivering food and medicines and so on, because there'd been feedback from volunteers that they'd been talking to people who sometimes really struggling, sometimes even feeling suicidal. So it was felt to there was a need to provide some sort of support. So yeah, it's unusual to start a service in this way. Normally there's all sorts of specification about what a service is going to look like, and all this stuff is drawn up months in advance of actually beginning it. But in this case, we had to get the actual practical side of things going as quickly as possible, and then sort out a lot of the admin after. So for example, one of the first things I did was contact all the potential volunteers. We were given a list of names and contact details of people that had volunteered for the initial effort, but mentioned they had some counselling or listening skills or experience, of which you two were in that group. So with me today, I've got Rebecca.
Hey.
And Claire.
Hello.
Well, I'll tell you what, shall I hand it over to you two now? Let's introduce yourselves and tell people a bit about you and what's got you interested in this kind of thing.
Rebecca, you can go first.
As soon as I got the email from Barry, I instantly said yes, because I'm a training counsellor and I've just basically got my diploma for it. So I'm very new and I'm wanting the experience and the training hours. So I thought this was a perfect opportunity. And it's because I've got cerebral palsy, you see, so I'm not high risk than some people, but I need to be more careful.
Awesome. And so have you been going out?
Yeah, I've been going. I was self-isolating for like 13 weeks. And then when the shops opened, I started going out. So I've been going out for about a month now.
Gosh, 13 weeks, Rebecca.
Yeah.
Ooh. Wait, so I'm a counsellor as well. I did my diploma, I think, 10 years ago or something. Do you live alone, Rebecca?
No, I live with my parents because it's hard to find adapted housing. Yeah. But I'm hoping to move out soon because I'm 31 next month.
Well, I moved in to live with my parents just in this lockdown period. Mm. So I've had a little taste of... I live on my own normally. But I moved to my parents just as soon as lockdown happened because my mum's poorly and I just thought it'd be quite nice to isolate altogether, which it kind of was sometimes. But it's intense, eh?
Yeah, sometimes.
I was just going to say, so I lived with my mum and dad for 3 weeks and then I came back to Leeds.
Is that all you could handle?
That's all I could handle. My dad's got dementia, so it was funny because he couldn't. He's not very advanced dementia, but he didn't really understand why I was living there for a long period of time.
So it must have been hard and frustrating.
Yeah, I think so. And just he kind of knew that I wasn't meant to be there, but didn't really. And he was quite happy that I was there sometimes, but then he was a bit like, why are you still here? When you said you were you in lockdown for 13 weeks then, Rebecca? You didn't go out for 13 weeks?
No, I didn't go out for 13 weeks, no. I was self-isolating. And I knew that I wouldn't be able to be all right with myself consciously if I didn't get back in such a big thing, even though we haven't had many calls yet. I know that I haven't had any. I know that when this is over, I know I've done my small part to help people.
Yeah, so like your conscience, like it was your
conscience. Yeah, my conscience, yeah.
Sounds like that was very strong inside of you.
Yeah, As soon as I read the email, I instantly replied back.
And now we've been officially up and running since, I think it's about four, is this about the fourth week now?
Yeah, I think it is, yeah.
Yeah. And it works. But interestingly, there's not been the demand that was anticipated.
There was a momentum building with the DBS checks and everything, and then the services opened and there was the kind of nervousness about whether you'd get any calls or not, and then we didn't get any calls. So that's both good. Hopefully there's no need for the calls, but also, you wonder if, but they just don't know about it or something.
Yeah. So it was initially only promoted to the people that were volunteering through Leeds Council's scheme. Correct me if I'm wrong, is this called community care volunteering or something like that?
I think it is, yeah. It's something like that.
Okay, so I believe a good few thousand people will have received an email about that. Yes, but now we're talking about, well, how can we maybe drum up a bit more business? Yeah.
So I'm quite interested to see how it is when I get a call.
Yeah, well, I'm certain it will happen. It's interesting. I've been talking to the staff and so on that work here over the last, it's nearly 4 months now, isn't it? April, May, June, July. And there's been a definite change in how people have felt over this period. The long-term effects of a big traumatic incident like this, I think, are going to be very interesting, but sort of emotionally, I suspect that there will become more demand for this kind of service as time goes on. Yeah, even with lockdown easing, sort of stuff taking place, as people come out of a period of crisis, they'll maybe suddenly start to realise how they've been feeling all this time, or something like that.
How was that experience for you, Rebecca, in like coming out of this isolation period and then opening up a little bit?
It's been weird. Like the first day I went out, I went to Mingle Park, which is literally down the road, and it was weird just to see people.
Because
the only people I've seen is my parents, or people on Zoom or over FaceTime, so it was actually weird to actually see people. Because I said, it's strange to see people, and she was like, yeah. The world doesn't really change outside and from because obviously my mum has been working through lockdown to work their school, so my mum's had to be working all week, so for her it hasn't been that different. It's only for me that it's been a massive change, but now it's just like normal.
Because I think I feel really different now than I did in the initial, you know, when the pandemic first got diagnosed as a pandemic, and the panic was just palpable everywhere. Everyone was just frightened, and I couldn't imagine. So I was sort of locked down because my parents were self-isolating, so I was not going to the supermarket when I was living with them. And then coming back to Leeds was a bit of a... that kind of moment of not necessarily freedom, and I certainly don't feel free now. But it must have been a big deal to walk into Meanwood Park having in your house.
I just see people.
Absolutely. You've got a big smile on your face as you're talking about it.
Yeah, I smile all the time. I try not to get down about things because there's not much point. Like, I've had like two. In the 13 weeks, I had like two meltdowns where I couldn't cut, where it was getting to me and that. But over the time, I just got used to it again.
And what helped you in your meltdowns?
My mum and dad, and just to know that it wouldn't last forever.
Yeah.
Because before this, I was out every day and I was never in. Going here, there and everywhere, and the fact that we just abruptly couldn't anymore. Like, I think everybody knew it was coming, but because there was such a delay on lockdown, I think we're a sudden shock for everyone.
Yeah.
When it suddenly just hit that we couldn't go out anymore.
It became really real, didn't it?
Yeah.
Rather than this thing that was looming, it suddenly became, yeah, okay, this is a reality. And I can really relate to what you're saying about the, well, I don't know that you did say this, but it's like being, yeah, suddenly something changed and there was a real perception of you can't go out. And I think that really shifts your mindset, shifts your thinking. Yeah.
Because even if you don't want to go out normally, it's like a personal choice if you're saying out there, but this has been enforced.
Exactly. And something I've reflected on is the I feel like really grateful for our freedom that we have in this country. And you hear about like where in countries where women aren't allowed to do things or where there's wars and the freedom that we have and experience that we take for granted almost. And we had a bit of a taste of what it was like not to be able to do exactly what we want.
Hmm.
Yeah, it's weird. It's like a war, but not a war.
Yeah.
There were a lot of parallels drawn with the Second World War. I heard a really interesting program on Radio 4, just like in the first couple of weeks of lockdown, where they talked about like society's reaction to the Blitz and people being told they had to stay inside and like, you know, not have any lights on and stuff like that. And it was remarkably similar to how everyone was feeling and how the media were reporting things in lockdown.
I was in town briefly on Sunday and the Leeds United fans, because they won promotion and literally town was just full of people, no one social distancing, and it made me nervous, so I got out of town pretty quick.
People are sort of split very cleanly into two categories. I mean, it's maybe coming together a little bit more now, but there seem to be people that are very aware of the potential dangers and sort of behaving as if that's the case. And then there are people who, for whatever reason, are pretty much going on as normal.
Yeah.
And I also think that people kind of flip between different mindsets as well. So if take all the Leeds United fans that were out on Sunday. I suppose, you know, many of those would have stayed in the house for months. And then there's this good bit of news, which I mean, I've got a friend who's a Leeds United supporter and he's over the moon about this. Personally, I'm not a football fan, so I don't really get it, but apparently it's a really big deal.
Yeah, I'm not a football fan either.
But you could just see the effect this has had on people's moods that Leeds have, you know, won the, what's the phrasing? They've won the league or something?
Sorry, I'm sorry.
They won a match, I think. They're at the top.
They've been relegated to Premier League now.
Promoted. I think relegated is when you go down. Yeah, I know that much. But yeah, just seeing the effect it's had on people, I can well imagine it's like, oh, a bit of good news. Oh, let's all go and party. Let's forget, you know, the difficult things we've been through.
And I felt really bad for getting angry at it, because I do deserve, everybody does deserve to celebrate, but we've got to all remember there's a pandemic.
Well, that's it, yeah. But this is what I mean. I think there's very kind of black and white thinking. It's like, it's safe, it's not safe. Go to work, don't go to work. You know, it's very hard to hold both things in your mind at the same time.
And black and white's not going to get us out of this, is it? It's going to be grey. It's going to be tolerating risk or accepting COVID as part of our lives. And that's certainly, I think in lockdown, it was kind of simple in some ways because it was black and white. You weren't allowed to do and people either did or they did not. Whereas now I'm still trying to get my head around how many people I'm allowed to meet at any one time. And I keep saying, you're only allowed six. And then people keep saying, no, it's up to 30. And so I don't know, but I think as far as I've read.
Up to six in a park, isn't it? And then 30 weddings
and funerals. That's my understanding, Rebecca, as well. But my friends seem to have other interpretations, which just, And for me, something I've noticed in myself is, like, I'm sold on the idea of masks and I understand the importance of masks. And obviously we've seen people wearing masks to a lesser and greater extent throughout as things have progressed. But what really affects me is when I see a friend or someone I love wearing a mask or coming into my company wearing a mask, and I get this real like pang of, I think it's grief in terms of noticing that the connection that we have or the normal relationship that we have is interrupted and different.
Yeah.
When I see a stranger walking past a stranger in the street, I get that kind of fear, oh gosh, we live in a world where there's an infection risk. But I don't get that heartache sort of sadness. So that's just around for me, because more and more people who I love and are coming into my company wearing masks. And
So this is interesting, because within Dial House we're talking at the moment about opening up the service again and what it's going to look like and going through risk assessments and so on. And just last night I was having a conversation with the team about things like face masks, and people had a lot of different reactions to them. But there's different types, aren't there? So for example, you've got the visors, which look like you're supposed to be like welding a bridge together or something like that.
Yeah.
And I thought, that's quite good, because a lot of the criticism that I've heard from people about face masks is you can't see the mouth, you can't see facial expressions, things like that, which a lot of people really struggle with. In particular, an extreme example is deaf people. You know, it's like cuts off sort of 50% of the communication. So I was interested, Claire, when you sort of talk about sort of feeling that grief, is that any kind of mask, it's like a reminder of what's going on, or does it depend on how much of their face you can't see?
I think he's definitely connected to the person, the relationship I have with the person. And because I agree in terms of the visors. So we went to a beer garden and the guy had a visor on rather than a mask. And that was just much more pleasant because you could see him smiling and what have you. But I've heard mixed feelings about, or mixed reactions about, the safety, because the air goes down the bottom of the mask. It's not actually covering your mouth, is it? It's more for protecting your eyes from welding, I imagine. But so I prefer the visors, but I'm not sure how safer, if they're as safe as the masks.
Well, I guess it wouldn't provide much protection if you're standing right close to somebody.
Which is what hairdressers are, because a lot of the hairdressers are wearing them. My hairdresser just had a mask on, and my therapist had a mask and a visor. She was double belts and braces.
Yeah, very sensible.
But I always say to my friends, and like this might be the therapist in me, but I'm just saying it's really important to acknowledge your feelings around the behaviour that you're asking to adopt, rather than just putting the mask on. Like, and some people might not be aware of their feelings, but I am definitely aware of feeling sad when I see somebody I know well in a mask, which I don't get when I see a stranger, to the same
I find it hard when I see friends like from the 2 meters,
and
they're not wearing a mask, but you still can't go near them to even give them a hug, and I'm finding that really difficult, because strangers, that doesn't bother me. I can just walk past them, but I'm finding it really difficult. And the emotion behind not being able to go near someone I know.
And do you tell them that, Rebecca?
Is what, sir?
Do you tell them that?
Yeah, and they do as well, because they always give me a hug and that when they see me and things, and they go, it's really weird not being able to give you a hug. It's a simple human nature, and it's what humans are meant do, and we just can't do the simple gestures now. Even smiling is becoming a not known thing anymore, because people wear masks, and you can't even smile to someone, and that's the simplest gesture you can, and kindness you can give to someone, and even that disappeared now.
I agree completely, and that's where the parallels with the war can kind of stop, because actually in the war, I think I wasn't there, but my sense is that community spirit was something that really supported them and the connection between each other and pulling together. And I know we've been told that we're pulling together, but I agree completely, Rebecca, and I think, and also if you think about it from a psychology point of view, like our soothing system that we use to...
Yeah.
stop feeling anxious or support us when we feel anxious, our soothing system is all about contact and connection.
Yeah.
That's something that masks, and not being able to hug and touch is denying us. So we're in lockdown, when it was when we were absolutely in lockdown, and like the only people I could hug was my parents. We're not terribly hugging, me and my parents. I was just like, I need a hug, I need a hug so desperately. And so when I broke my, I bubbled with the family, and it was just the most precious thing to be able to hug like my friends and these two little kiddies. So I really hear what you're saying in terms of missing the hugs. I definitely am doing that as well.
Yeah, it'll just make us appreciate it more when we can, when everything can go back to, I don't think anything will go back to the way it was before. I think this is the new normal. Maybe the restrictions and that will go when we get, but I think everyone will win and we won't go back to the way we were before.
I really agree with what you're saying as well. And there's something I've noticed about when you read books or when you watch TV and it's like normal time, normal reading a book. And it's like our life will never ever be the same again after living through this. And anything you read or anything you watch or it's just going to be infused or affected or tainted by, changed, shall we say in a more optimistic language, changed by the fact that the pandemic has been.
Yeah, it's proper, it's like the world resetting itself.
And hopefully there'll be, you know, there'll be some amazing things to come out of it as well. But I worry about the kids and you know, the kids whose natural reaction is just to hug or to touch or to run up to their grandparents or whatever and cuddle them. And you hear stories about kids who just like, no, they don't even try to hug them now. They just wave at the window. That is just, you know, if you think about what we learn in our psychology training, it's all about how things can shut down, can't they? Urgent, whatever.
We might not even go to hug someone again now because we'll be so used to. I think we'll get to the point where we're so used to doing it this way now that we'll forget that we can actually have contact with people again.
But that's why I like what you say when you tell people that you want to hug them. I'm definitely doing that. I'm like saying, I really want to hug you right now, especially with kids. I'm doing that a lot with kids.
Yeah.
Like I'm finding it really hard not to squeeze your hand right now or something. And then it's just like the urge, they know that the impetus is there or something.
Yeah, that's lovely.
It's nice to talk about it, though, isn't it? I think, and that brings up the point of this, the helpline in some ways. You know, you were asking like why do you want to do this? And I think the more opportunities people have to talk about their experiences, if they can to talk about it in a connected way, like to just drop into themselves and just go, oh, this is hard, this is great, I'm really enjoying not having to hug X, Y, and Z, but I hate not hugging so and so.
I think it's important because counsellors or anyone in the mental health profession might think, we can't talk about our own feelings because we're so used to making sure other people are right. We are human as well. We're not just a robot. And we do have feelings and emotions. And we are going through this just like anyone else.
Absolutely. And I think it's really important to not put yourself on a pedestal of I'm okay and I've got it and I'm immune to feeling anxious, or, you know, it's absolute rubbish, isn't it? And the more that you can be in touch with your own distress, I think it can help you to be in touch with other people's.
This is something that I've been thinking about, all those frontline volunteers that have been going on effectively as though life is normal. And I don't mean normal because obviously things have been so different, but they have been part of a privileged group, if you like, that have been well enough and felt confident enough to go out and help people. So they would have been going to, I don't know, to shops or to chemists or whatever, going to people's homes. And that sort of movement, that social interaction with lots of different people that they'll have had every day, will have kept them sort of emotionally much healthier than those of us that have been stuck in a house and limited with our social contact and so on. But I wonder if that will also, in a way, act as a, like a false, I've got the French term, faux ami, like a false self of, sense of confidence. Oh, actually, I've got through this last 3 or 4 months. It's been fine. I've spoke to one person who rang up the helpline, actually, and he was telling me how it's been like a really rewarding period for him. So he's really felt like he's been able to give back to people that were quite vulnerable. But at the same time, it has been like a massive shock for all our nervous systems that we've gone through this. So, you know, those of us that are suffering a bit, it's easy for us to identify what we've been through. But for people that actually have been feeling good about the last few months, it may come a little bit under the radar at some point, the effects of everything they've been through.
Especially when everything does calm down, because there will be an ending at some point. They might keep going and then suddenly they might get a rush of emotion, but then hopefully they don't just feel, oh, we can't ring now because we've been saying we're all right for so long. I hope that doesn't happen to people.
Well, this is one of the messages I want to get out, is that you don't have to be talking about volunteer experiences from the last week or the last month or something. It can be just the combined impact of stuff that you've been through. I think it's
even just to frame it as to talk about your experience of COVID, because, like, you know, Rebecca and I have just been talking, haven't we, about our personal circumstances, and in some ways they're volunteers, but you don't just have to talk about your volunteer experience. You could talk about, like, the fact that you've got someone who's shielding, or that you're having arguments with your husband or your wife, or kids are driving you up the wall because you're homeschooling. You know, it's all relevant, isn't it? I just need to log in to me. I'm on call now and I'm like 9:15.
It's fine, don't worry.
me too. So we must be on the same shift then, because I should be on.
Oh, should you? Oh, is there more than one person on shift? I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's up to 4.
Oh, fab. Well, that makes me feel less pressured. I thought it was just me.
Oh, no. I mean, on some occasions, it might be just you. The rotor's kind of a little bit of a... what do you call those things where people sew coloured squares onto sheets?
Patchwork?
Yeah, it's a bit of a patchwork. So there are some periods where there'll be three... I'm not sure we've got actually 4 people on at one time, but there's definitely periods where we've got 3 people on, and then there's a few spaces where there's no one for an hour or something like that.
Glenn, you have a question to ask.
Go for it.
Oh, what was my question?
You were going to ask Barry something.
Yeah, it was about... Hang on, I've lost you. Oh, yeah, you're there. What did I say? I can't remember what I asked you, Barry. I asked you how many volunteers are there? Barry, how many volunteers are there?
There is in the region of 25, I think, at the moment.
Well, where are they all then? Why is there only me and Rebecca here?
I don't know. I guess not everybody is that comfortable with talking about this kind of thing. Or
I'm just one of these people that, if I haven't done it before, I like doing new experiences.
Oh.
And if it's going to help people as well. And as much as I don't want cars, it can be pretty boring waiting for them. So if this is going to make our shifts more worthwhile, then it's worth doing.
Yeah,
nobody wants to be at work with nothing to do, although on the surface it sounds quite attractive. It certainly makes the day go slower. It's also our experience in the different services we've set up in this organisation that there's always a delay at the beginning before a service becomes known about and becomes used. So I'm not massively surprised. I've also had some contact with people that work in other support type services, particularly helplines, where they've described a similar phenomenon of things not being particularly well subscribed, surprisingly undersubscribed, in fact. So it will be interesting, I guess, to hear from anybody that would like to get in touch from the thousands of people that I know listen to this podcast every week. If you work somewhere and you've had a similar experience, thank you very much both for your input today. It's been really interesting and helpful for me to hear about your experiences recently.
No worries.
Nice to meet you, Carl.
Yeah, and you, Rebecca, as well. Take care.
All right, thank you very much.
See ya.